Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Susan Benjamin is the owner of True Treats Historic Candy, and she's the author of a book called Sweet as Sin. It's a look into the remarkable cultural and social history of candy and the evolution of the human palate. She arrives in Deadwood for a book signing, presentation, and candy tasting tomorrow. That's at noon Mountain Time. I caught up with Susan yesterday and asked her about the intersection between candy and sin.
So the history of candy is just absolutely loaded with various levels of sin that really are interesting once you realize what they are. So, and in fact, I'll just say that in my shop, there was a group of nuns, all in their habits, in the really old-fashioned style, in a half circle around a display of my books. And I wondered what they were thinking. Were they wondering which sin is that exactly or what? But the fact of the matter is that there are many sins that the book is referring to. For me, one of the biggest is the role of sugar in the cane sugar in enslavement. And were it not for the cane sugar, we likely would not have had slaves today.
Really?
Yeah, or I shouldn't say today. We likely would not have had slaves in this country ever. And that's a thought that is pretty much not in the consciousness of people today, but in fact affects them in terms of the sugar that they eat. For the abolitionists, one of their means of eliminating enslavement was by boycotting the cane sugar. And in its place, though, they needed to find other sugars. So it's really important to recognize that sugar was seen as very important to everybody throughout history. For the Native Americans, it may have been as a preservative with the fruits. For the European, it was also for fermentation. And for just about everybody, it was also medicinal. So they needed to find other sugars to replace the cane sugar. And what they did find, or what they did use, were things such as the sorghum and the beet sugar, both of which grew in cold climates and were pretty reliable growers. Today, at least according to one source, about 55% of the sugar Americans eat is beet sugar, not cane sugar. And that got started by the abolitionists and really took off to a great extent after the Civil War.
So was candy being sold as candy in early American times, or was it being sold as medicine? What's the sort of connection between medicine and candy?
It's a very difficult connection, and it's a really hard connection to know when did it start and when didn't it.
Right.
So the boiled sugars, for example, were in fact medicines, but they also were there for pleasure. So I would say there are so many examples to use, and they're all just remarkable. But I would say the real almost tiebreaker, you could say, is the Necco wafer, which I know isn't as familiar in South Dakota, but people may know it anyway, and if they don't, they may know the conversation heart, which are the sweetheart candies that you get during Valentine's Day. And those were made by a guy named Oliver Chase, and he was a pharmacist in 1847 who developed a little pill cutter, which is really important because now people could start cutting pills and even slices. It wasn't hard to make doses. It wasn't as much guesswork, and they could do it quickly. He left the bad-tasting medicines out, kept the good-tasting medicines in, and that, in fact, was the very first penny candy in the mid-1800s, known, as I mentioned, as the Necco wafer. And just a footnote to this, is his brother, about 10 years later, his brother Daniel, made a stamp machine for food, and that was, in fact, the sweetheart candy, the conversation heart.
Is there candy in every culture throughout the world? Do you always see elements of candy or sweet treats sort of popping up?
Well, I'll tell you, it's an excellent question because in this country, candy really came about because of two things. One was the drop in sugar prices. I should say three. One was the drop in sugar prices. One was industrialization, which gave people the opportunity to make really unique kinds of candy or products. And then number three was, with all of that came the wonders of marketing. So candy makers, or really at that point they weren't candy makers, they were maybe confectioners, and they were certainly different people in the apothecaries. And they figured out, oh my gosh, you know, we can make these wonderful kinds of candies for kids, these wonderful things that kids can get, and they'll spend all of their money on it, and they'll keep buying it, and we can make it look fun and attractive and so forth. That was around the mid-1800s, as I mentioned, and that's where candy began. It's very, very important because, at least amongst the immigrants to this country, it was the first time that the much maligned children of the working class, and much maligned in that way by the well-to-do, it was the first time they had access to the middle class. They could take their pennies and go in and buy this new item called candy. That, in turn, made candy a scapegoat. So the well-to-do really, I mean, they said the candy was poisoning people. In the 20s, some years later, they blamed it on the spread of polio. You know, it's just a remarkable thing. And, in fact, that has stayed with us today when we think of candy.
The fact that it's poisoning children, or there's something bad about it, or... Is that what you mean by what has stayed with us to this day?
Yeah, the view of when people... So I have a candy shop as well as having written the book, and I do a lot of my research on personal experiences through some of the people who come in. And what you find is that people come in and they kind of smirk when I tell them we have a historic candy store.
Sure.
Because to them, as to so many people, candy just seems too frivolous and too bad for you to actually have a serious kind of a history, but in fact it does. And the viewpoint that candy is bad, and parents really tell the kids don't eat that candy or only get a little bit or whatever, harkens back, I believe, to that time in history when it really started becoming its own item.
Sure. Talk a little bit about that marketing and some of the innovations in candy that come out in American culture over the years.
There are so many innovations, and some of them better and some of them worse. So in a very large sense, people started adding all sorts of artificial colors, dyes, flavorings, and really did make some candy really bad for you, and gave birth ultimately, candy amongst other things, gave birth ultimately, by the way, to the FDA. But some of the really kind of fun ones, they're the wax lips. I don't know if you know the wax lips that people use on Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
The wax lips, as well as some of its sister candies, such as the nickel nip with the little wax bottles with coloring in them.
Right.
And so this is a perfect idea. So the petroleum industry was born in a place called Titusville, Pennsylvania. And there was this whole thing called petroleum, and it was this amazing find. And one of the offshoots of that was paraffin wax. Mm-hmm. So here they are in Pennsylvania with all this extra paraffin wax, and what are they going to do with this? So this guy, whose name I can't recall, but he got this really great idea, let's make it food grade, and let's sell it to kids. Now, remember that most of the chewing gums of the time were made out of tree resin or had a tree resin base, so they were pretty hard. So the idea of taking this paraffin wax and making it into a chewing gum was one thing, but even better was shaping it and marketing it to kids. So he had the horse's teeth, he had mustaches, he had I think like over 100 different possibilities, and then he got a really great idea, which has been big in the candy world ever since, and by the way, in the cereal world as well, which is to turn them into toys. So they have these wonderful tops that kids could spin and play with, and then take a bite out of it and use it as chewing gum.
Oh my.
Yeah, that's one of the examples of the innovations. I mean, the lollipop is another. There are a lot of them.
When people come into your store, are they looking just to find out what's in there? Are they seeking out a certain kind of candy that they remember from their youth?
I will tell you why people come in our store. They come in our store because they have no idea what historic candy is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just curiosity. We're in our base is in a historic park at Harper's Ferry, but some of our customers are places like the museum, Days of 76 Museum, and the Deadwood group of museums. And so they get candy from us largely because it really does relate to what things people were eating at that time period. And we really focus. We don't focus on presidents, but we focus on everybody else. So we look at what the native people were eating, and we look at what the new arrivals from Europe were eating. And so they go to places like that to get a true taste of history. In our shop, they're like, what's the first chewing gum exactly? You know, what do you mean by historic? They always say, what do you mean by historic?
Sure.
And I say, what do you think? They have no idea that there could be such a thing as a history behind candy.
Did immigrants from Europe and other places bring their own candy with them to the American tradition?
Oh, they certainly did, and they did it either as a treat or just as something that they, something that they valued. So want me to give you one really great example that goes into the making of candy?
I would love it.
Okay, people don't know this. The honeybee.
Hmm.
So the honeybee was brought by the British in 1622. And the Native Americans, where they landed in Virginia, what is now Virginia, had never seen a honeybee before, and they didn't know what it was, and they didn't have a word for it. So the name they gave it was called the white man's fly. And the white man's fly traveled, swarmed, really, ahead of the white man. And eventually, the Native Americans further to the west, when they saw the honeybee, they knew that, in fact, the white man would follow. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. Huh. I did not know that. I've never heard that before.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and one of, so we don't look at many of the presidents, which we're not anti-president, but we're really pro-people.
Okay.
You know,
so
more for the general rule than the exception. But one of my sources for that was, in fact, Thomas Jefferson, one of them.
Interesting. Native American candy, then what?
Right. Well, and it wasn't just honeybees, of course. It was the peach and so many of the ingredients in candy today. So I've spent a lot of time trying to track down some of the Native American sweets. And I hear from Native Americans a lot from various nations around the country that, well, we never really did have sweets. But the fact of the matter is they did, but maybe didn't consider them so. So one of the examples, of course, you know, it isn't really a sweet, but it's the wasna or the pemmican.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you have to say, is in the North, in North America, in that great body of land of ours, is one of the original uses of sugar, because the berries that they added to the meat, part of the value was, in fact, that the sugar worked as a preservative. The acid probably did, and of course the animal fat did, but the sugar did play that part as well. They also, it's so fascinating to me, is candied in various parts of the country, and I can't be specific because I haven't been able to get specific, and there are so many places where they did it, but would candy the cob, the corn cob, and candied corn cob was important, as was corn syrup. In Appalachia, near where I live, today the vestiges of that are, in fact, the corn cob jelly. Hmm. So the people of Appalachia started using the corn cob for that as well.
Interesting.
When
I think of candy, I think of literature and the literature of my childhood. And then you go to Turkish Delight and the candy that was in the stocking of Laura Ingalls Wilder in her books at Christmas. Charlie and His Great Chocolate Factory, obviously. How much does literature and children's literature sort of fuel the candy conversation?
Well, I think it fuels it a lot, and not just because of the literature, but because what the literature does to people in terms of candy. So many, many people, and I know this of your listeners, but I also know this from the shop, remember grandparents and great aunts and just people who they loved and who loved them eating certain candies and giving it to them, particularly grandmothers of one time period out of their purses. Having said that, and I cannot underscore how remarkably beautiful and amazing these stories are. They really, really are. But having said that, the origin of the candies, they pretty uniformly get wrong.
What do you mean? The origins, what do you mean?
Okay, right, okay. So you talked about Turkish Delight, and I don't know how many people know about Turkish Delight, but they have indeed tried it, even if they don't know they have. Oh. It's a great story. Turkish Delight was invented in the Arabic apothecaries around the year 900, just about then. And people used it as a medicine, as they did. I mentioned most of the candies had some kind of value, remembering that food at one time was either healthy for you, it was medicinal, or it killed you. So this idea of unhealthy things kind of didn't exist. So people used it as a medicine. The name today is lakum in Arabic, which means throat's ease, for that. And people kept eating it and enjoying it, and eventually, this is all over the Mediterranean and the Mideast, eventually the Turkish Delight made its way to Boston, Massachusetts, which was an active port, and, you know, whalers and seamen, and everybody brought things from all over. And in the mid-1800s, unknown person, nobody knows quite who, got this idea to put a sugar shell on the Turkish Delight. And they were doing that anyway. It's called panning is the process. So they put a sugar shell on the Turkish Delight, sent it to the Union soldiers who ate that. And that particular kind of candy, are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Became known as a jelly bean.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That is the origin of the jelly bean. So, and then, of course, a guy in 1921 used that fundamental group of ingredients to make the gummy bear. And that was a whole other line of candies that came off of it. Uh-huh. So it started as a medicine, and now it's the Jelly Belly. Who knew?
That I did not know either. I remember reading the book as a child and not knowing what Turkish Delight was, but really wanting it because they made it sound so delicious.
It is so delicious, by the way, with the pure Turkish Delight. Oh, my gosh. People come in just to get that. It's wonderful.
Oh, that's fabulous. Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite candy? I feel like I'm remiss if I don't ask you if you have a favorite candy.
No, and you're perfectly entitled to, and I want to tell you, I do quite a bit of radio and TV and public radio and NPR and so on, and not one host hasn't asked me that question, and I'm going to do, you'll be the first for me to answer it in truth, okay?
All right.
Because I never want to own up to this. The one I love the most, I don't eat it that much, but I just love it when I eat it, is the Pop Rocks.
Oh, yes.
These little energetic explosions in your mouth. I just love it.
You know, years ago when I was little, they made what was called tartan tinies.
Huh.
And they were just these tiny little bits of sugar, the multicolored, and they don't make them anymore. And they took them away. They brought them back with a candy coating, which was not as good as the original. And now I think they're gone altogether. So every time I go into a candy shop, I search out tartan tinies and I never get them, and there's a little secret about me as well that I've never told anyone.
Well, I'm going to give you hope for your future, which is that these candies come and go.
Yes.
The Turkish taffy was gone for about 30 years.
Wow.
The sensen was around for a hundred years, and now it doesn't. It's not around. It may yet come back. And after this broadcast, I'm even more hopeful that it will.
Susan, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, such a pleasure.
Enjoy your time in South Dakota.
Oh, I know I will. Thank you.
All right. Bye now.